right, Cole. What are you doing this time?
Well, Gary, I am glad that you met me here at the perimeter of the correctional institution.
Oh, finally turning ourselves in.
Yep.
Pod crimes.
We can't keep getting away with it. No, I decided that I would try and fix my fears and attempt to make some kind of comedy out of a subject that really depresses me, which is the United States penal system.
It's going to be one of those kinds of episodes.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. No. So I know my family has worked at this place. I know where the usual dead drops come in, right? How contraband enters here. So
contraband.
Contraband.
How does contraband enter there?
Sorry, my nose is my nose is stuffed up. So it sounded like I said contraband. Who knows? But you know, they send a bunch of stuff in. You know, all kinds of contraband, not just drugs, but cell phones and things like that.
But I watched Orange Is the New Black. I understand what contraband is.
Yeah. So I'm just going to reach under this rock. Okay, we got a package of duct tape here. We're gonna see if there's a video game inside.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing you might want to smuggle in.
Anything to pass the time, right?
I think it's strange that they give inmates TV and Dungeons and Dragons, but not video games.
Yeah, some places they don't like them having TV, although it absolutely would reduce the amount of unrest and violence.
Yeah,
because people are people.
Watch my stories.
And if if they're kept occupied, they don't tend to, you know, fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like real 101 shit.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
let's open up this dead drop here.
Okay. It has to be a GameCube disc because, you know, they're smaller. Okay. Shuffling through. All right, I've got The Suffering. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. All right. Mm-hmm. Wasn't so much funny as it was socially aware.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... Kyle Kinane, who is a comedian had a bit about that where he's like was talking about how comedians stopped telling jokes and at one point just started like saying things that were true.
Uh-huh.
And how that's, you know, he doesn't like it.
Uh-huh.
You know, like it wasn't him being like, oh, woke comedy or whatever.
No.
He was just saying like, you know, don't forget the comedy part. And he was just like, hey, you know, Kyle, what do you think of the comedy show? He's like, oh yeah, we agreed a lot. It was awesome. You know? Very funny. I'm Gary Butterfield.
I'm Cole Ross.
You're listening to Abject Suffering, the show where... Wait, hold on, Cole. Twitter's frozen. No, my computer's for shit.
No. Well, dang. Can't do the show.
Time for torque.
Time for torque. Pretty much the only reason I brought this to us. This is a Cole pick. Although I believe that I need to check and see if there are any other people who dropped this in. But this is a game that I remember from my time working at GameStop. We just kind of put it on the back and played it a little bit because it was funny.
Yeah, it's very popular.
Yeah.
The Suffering. This is, you know, good reviews on GameFAQs, like generally well received for stuff that we do for the show.
Yeah.
And it's about a man named Torque.
Yep.
Who an earthquake strikes his Maryland prison and has to fight a bunch of supernatural threats that pop in and confront his personal demons.
Yes. Yeah. He was incarcerated for a crime that he doesn't say anything. And they're doing something that I don't like in video games, especially like horror video game. Basically, it's something that I don't like in the Silent Hill games that do it, where your actions during the game determine what your actions in the past were.
Okay.
So like over the course of this game, you know, you're given an option to either help people or kill them to get what you want. And if you kill them
real quick before you go into that, can I just say one of my all-time favorite, like, gaming.txt sentences.
Yes.
From the Wikipedia. These situations involve NPCs, and the choices are usually to help the person, parentheses, good morality, kill them, parentheses, bad morality, or ignore them, parentheses, neutral morality. So there's your ethics text.
I'm really, really happy that they clarified.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Help them. Frenzy's good morality.
That's really good morality. That's really prescriptive, though, because, like, what if I'm helping them do a bad thing? What if they go and kill somebody immediately?
There are many schools of thought on it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, virtue ethics and, you know, but it's very, very funny to me.
I mean, does this Wikipedia go into, you know, whether or not that's a deontological analysis or whether it's utilitarian? No, it's
surprisingly little Kantian.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much entirely deontological, isn't it? If they're just saying that some things are always absolutely good and absolutely bad. So,
yeah.
Cool.
Or ignoring, which is always neutral.
Yes. One of my favorite lines from a Baby Cakes video, you know, if bad people mostly do bad things, good people mostly do good things. I try and do mostly neutral things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the idea of doing neutral things like sitting around drinking beer and playing D&D with your buddies.
Can we put a pin?
Yes.
In that? Like, I have something to say about that is funny that I can't remember if I talked about it on the show before.
Okay, go ahead.
But no, you're going to say something before.
No.
The thing you don't like that Silent Hill games do.
They did this in Silent Hill Downpour where... you know, pretty much the exact same thing, whether or not your main character is guilty of the crime that they were incarcerated for is determined by your actions in the game. I would rather it be constant and then, yeah, I don't know. But in this, whether or not you killed your wife and child is, you know, it depends. It depends on whether or not you do good, neutral, or bad things.
Yeah, whether you help people, hurt people, or ignore them.
Right.
If you ignore them, it turns out you ignored your wife and child in the past.
Yeah.
So I had a friend as a kid who I don't want to name because, you know, still in circles, a friend of me and Derek, who was a pathological liar.
Okay.
Like lied a lot and would tell us these stories about, you know, criminals breaking into his house and him having to like hide under the bed, you know, from them, things like that.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, preteen bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, tween bullshit. But he, we got into D&D, so it introduced all of us young idiots into the idea of morality and alignment. And he was really into like being neutral. And he's like, yeah, I just want to be, you know, neutral.
Real druid, so this guy.
Which is, you know, it's a really silly alignment. and he wrote this short story about a guy. He was like working out all of his stuff really obviously. So he really hated yuppies.
Okay.
Because, you know, we were like 12 or 13. Like, you know, you just hate random shit. He wrote this story called Yaddle Yaps of Yuppie Yuck about this character, Yaddle, meeting the god of neutrality and encouraging him to be more neutral.
Okay.
And it was one of the weird, me and Derek, my other friend, were just like, this is the, you know, laughing. At him, because we're teens, are cruel to each other. It wasn't
right.
Hey, this is a good story, try better, you know. It was we're teens, we're just mean,
right.
But it was one of the weirdest, like, this whole thing about meeting the god of neutrality and being like, ah yes, be neutral, my son.
I mean, it would become like a joke in Futurama. Very, very
yeah well, exactly. But this was in 1993.
Yeah,
you know, that this happened, like, this was so just ridiculous as a cool teen thing. He also used to like talk about like things, like he would talk about, tell lies about his father. He was estranged about doing things in war and telling these war stories about his father, like single-handedly taking on like big Dermot energy.
Oh yeah. Venture Brothers. Yeah, that wasn't like for you, that was for these, listeners.
So taking on all these people for like with a flamethrower, like, yeah, just took on like 20 soldiers with a flamethrower.
Yeah.
And stuff. It's just really fucking silly.
Like, I've known people like that, and they've never really been close friends, you know, because, I mean, if they're going to lie about that, if they're going to lie about stuff that doesn't matter, are they going to lie about stuff that does, you know? So, like, yeah, whatever. But, like, when I've been in a conversation with some of those people, you know, like even, like, in elementary school, like, you know, my uncle works at Nintendo, or, you know, I have a family member who like worked on the Star Wars movies or whatever. Like my strategy, you know, because I want to hear a story. So just like to ask them questions and goad them on, you know, almost like a group improv thing. Like, I know you're lying to me, but I'm going to act interested and act and ask questions as though I think you're telling me the truth, just to see where you take it.
Yeah, I want to hear how far you can go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah,
you know, and unless anybody think I'm like I have a lot of sympathy for this dude now.
Yeah,
like in retrospect, I'm just like, oh, this is, you know, like I have no derision in my heart.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, I did because I was not fully developed, mm-hmm. and I had enough shit I was working on. You know, it's like those were golden years for me.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be a little bit kind to myself in terms of what I thought back then, but the you know. Now I think I would have more of a, I'm going to know that you're lying. I'd have more of your approach to it. Like,
yeah.
Just going to go along with this and not judge it. And then like just slowly distance myself.
Yeah. Like my approach was, was a little bit, you know, it came from an unhealthy place, which was I've always been terrified of conflict, you know? So like, rather than say, dude, that's bullshit or whatever. Like I just wasn't interested in having it be like a fight or an argument. So I was like, well, I might as well get something out of this, you know? And, you know, when I think back to it, I was like, oh, I was like, he was getting something out of it as well. You know, whether or not he thought I believed it or thought I was impressed, it was still, you know, an interaction. Cause like that behavior always comes across a little bit like a call for attention or whatever. Like, you know, they're indulging
somebody in an inauthentic way.
Yeah.
Like there is deception on both sides, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So I get that for sure.
But the God of neutrality, like I almost would have rather been that than what I was like as a teenage, as a teenage D&D kind of guy, which was like, oh, I'm real interested in the, you know, the conflicted lawful good character, you know, the paladin who needs to be good, but like, you know, is, you know, knows that it might not be the right way to go about it or whatever.
Yeah. You know? Realizes that it's like hugely, you know, makes it impossible to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone's least favorite member of the party.
Yes.
I played a game recently, like last summer, but where I played a character who like wouldn't kill people.
Oh, okay.
As a thing. And boy, does that throw a real wrench in the plans when you play with a party that will.
What system are you playing in?
This was in Burning Wheel, which is way more open to that kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't just like Murder Hobo and stuff, but it made things difficult because it's not uninteresting. You know, and I'm not saying like you have to kill to play D&D, but when you have other characters who are like, hey, this person's clearly, you know, me and Jeremy are talking about this in Days of Future Cast right now because we're talking about the Brood. Mm-hmm. And the Brood are evil aliens that just want to like enslave everybody and kill everybody and force like empreg them.
Okay.
And the X-Men are constantly whinging about whether it's okay to kill them or not.
It's like,
they're fucking xenomorphs. Like they force pregnated you.
Uh-huh.
They you know, like, I think it's probably okay.
Yeah.
To retaliate there. You can play D&D as a pacifist character and have it be fine, or play tabletop. It's just hard when somebody else isn't that way.
Right. Because
there's only so many different ways that conversation shakes down.
Yeah. Because, you know, if your characters weren't bound to each other, you would go your separate way. Cause you wouldn't be around somebody who kills as profligately as, you know, the standard party. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you have to find ways to keep everybody together or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So very different than the suffering, though.
Very different.
The only tie is that D&D is huge in prison.
And of course.
I've oftentimes thought that if I ever end up in prison, that's my ticket.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm going to try to find some people, become a dungeon master,
mm-hmm.
and just be like, listen, you have to not kill me if you want to find out what happens next.
Yeah.
You know?
Do like a Shazerahad thing, but like with like 10 other dudes.
With me. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, this is like a real grim, dark, third person shooter, terrible controls. They insist that it's not a survival horror game. And I would tend to agree. In the half hour that I played, I only really got through the opening, really, when the most basic enemy started showing up. Enemy design's pretty cool, you know, as far as these things go.
Execution methods.
Yes.
Which is a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And this ended up, like, I don't like how this controls either, even though they spend a lot of time figuring that out. The reason why, you know, they did that was because nobody knew how to make, you know, like, they didn't have a standardized control scheme.
Right.
I was thinking that this, in a more standardized control scheme, I would, might enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, just as, like, grindhouse popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, you know, the politics of this game are probably not very good.
Yeah.
You know, but the idea of being in a haunted prison,
mm-hmm.
You know, that is cool to me.
Like, the dialogue, even at the start when the prisoners were talking to each other, like, was not terrible, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
No. You know, dialogue between them and the CO is like, I don't know, maybe it's just because it was boilerplate, you know, just here's a media depiction of prisoners, I guess, but like, that was engaging enough.
Well, I mean, we talked about this before, like, and it's one of those things where I have to separate all of my, you know, separate my politics from it. Like, I've always had a fascination with prison
mm-hmm.
that I don't know if it's okay. Like, yeah. I don't know if it's problematic that I'm just interested in it. And I wouldn't, you know, front that interest over prison reform or anything. Like, I understand that real humans suffer from it and there are real issues. I'm also just really interested in it as like a surreal other world.
Yeah.
You know, that is this kind of extreme of human misery and ways we hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, we disagree that some people can put other people in this thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is fascinating to me as a Starman kind of perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can put a little bit of balm on that. The way that I've gotten around it is say like something like what, like 1 in 11 people in America is in prison or something like that. Like it's mm-hmm. pretty fucking ridiculous, actually. How many people in America are incarcerated or in the system in some regard? You know, it gets even more like if you count people who are, you know, on parole, right? Who are on like conditional release and things like that. So like it is such a part of the American experience that like, you know, and have met people who have been inside. I definitely know people who have been inside. I know people who've been on both sides of it, you know? So like understanding what goes on inside of prisons is a little bit like, you know,
Are you saying that your family participated in the Great Opposite Day Massacre of 1996?
No.
When everybody just switched sides for one day for fun and it didn't go as well as they thought it would.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that my family has mostly been involved in corrections, and I've had friends and coworkers and acquaintances who have been incarcerated in some form or fashion. Basically, what I'm saying is like it's a little bit like understanding like what do blue collar workers go through in America, like, you know, what's shift work like or whatever. Like just it's a fact.
The part of me that feels problematized about it is like it's like I don't want it to be like misery tourism.
Right.
You know, which is something that I've been questioning a lot because now that I'm as the Slack has dubbed me Atrocity Gary, like the cousin to Calamity Ganon, who hangs out and just reads books about atrocities.
Right.
It's like I want to self-justify it to my, like I am getting something nourishing from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like learning about prison does make me feel grateful. It is just interesting to me, though, and I'm just trying to interrogate that interest.
Yeah.
You know, the part that's, like, just purely fascinating to me that is not, like, human, that isn't activating my emotions.
Right. You know, it's kind of like, again, I keep trying to offer you, like, trapdoors out of this morally complex feeling that you're having, first of which is if you're aware enough to think, is this a problem or not? Then it probably isn't a problem because you have thought to ask the question about it.
I'm giving it thought. Yeah.
But also like it's a fascination with an extreme of living, you know, just the way that we, you know, I'm fascinated with people who live as hermits, right?
Yeah, or with like undiscovered people. It's totally by choice.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
Like it's the fascination with the extremes of humanity that's going on. Even though I recognize like this is a very real problem and I, you know, arguably could and should be out protesting it and trying to get reform done in an active way. Did you see the Game Facts review that is when I started acting like Torque? Well, that's why I stopped being invited to family functions.
Oh, no, I didn't. because I would have led with that.
It doesn't take long for the casual gamer to realize Torque isn't the sort of hero the general public will look up to. Thanks, Overdrive.
Yeah, you did thanks good.
The American Gladiator pretending to be another American Gladiator.
Oh yeah, and a lot of the reviews are just like shitty don't drop the soap jokes too.
Yeah, it was hard to find this. That was not ridiculous.
That wasn't just a lazy joke. Yeah. No. That's when I stopped being invited to family functions.
Yeah. You don't want to. Torque is not a role model.
No. He never claimed to be either. Torque isn't here to make friends.
Torque is certainly not here to make friends. Do you think that if this game had a huge, because this game came out of Windows, I would have a mod of this that is. Mods everything to be more like Ernest Goes to Jail.
I love it. Oh my God.
Yeah. And like the villains, because that is also kind of similar, not too dissimilar of a plot of this. Like a natural disaster strikes and gives Ernest electricity powers in that movie.
Yep.
But he also fights like ghosts and shit during it, I'm pretty sure. So yeah. Feels like an easy skin.
It is. I mean, just, at least do a voice swap. Does Torque have dialogue? I don't think Torque has dialogue.
No, Torque is a silent protagonist. That's why you don't want to act like Torque at your family function.
Torque is Vern. Okay.
Know what I mean, Torque? Pen and Torque. You're doing magic routines and shit.
We've been on a little bit of a tear of like possibly over explaining outdated pop culture for people who aren't aware. Do you think we need to explain what the Ernest movies are?
Nobody knows what Ernest is who's listening to this. I've been doing that because I am this year is the year I started feeling old.
Okay.
In some ways, and started feeling like out of touch and unconfident in that stuff. Whereas previously I just felt like, oh, like I could reasonably make these, people I'm talking to are going to know what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
And now I don't feel that way anymore. Ernest is a yokel of sorts.
Yeah.
Comedy character yokel.
Played by Jim Varney. You would know him as the voice of Slinky Dog from Toy Story. Okay. Yes.
He also played the Carney from the pretty good late period Simpsons. And by late period, I mean solidly in the first third.
Yes. He played the old Carney in the episode Bart Carney. It this started as a character they did for commercials, and it became so popular that they just started making movies about it. But he's like
seven of them.
Yes. And they're always like Ernest goes somewhere. So like Ernest goes to camp. Ernest goes to prison. Ernest scared stupid. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. eventually these became direct to video nonsense things. Until the one I have not watched, but I'm very curious about, is 1997's Ernest Goes to Africa.
Oof.
Where I'm pretty sure he goes down to Africa and teaches native people how to play basketball.
Ernest gets canceled.
Yeah, Ernest gets Ernest is milkshake ducked. Absolutely incredible stuff.
Yeah,
I'm here, but I can watch it on Amazon Prime anytime I want. So.
But he's let's do it, obviously.
He unknowingly comes into possession of some stolen jewels and is kidnapped and brought back to Africa, where he must rescue the woman he loves. I think the trailer shows him playing basketball with some indigenous people. That's where I'm getting that from.
Gotcha. So. Okay. But yeah, he's like a
released as part of the Essential Ernest collection. Essential.
Doing a lot of work, the word essential in that. Yeah.
If you only have 10 Ernest movies in your collection, make sure it's the 10 of them that he made.
Yeah. But he's kind of like a yokel, working class kind of guy, although it's unclear what he actually does. His primary thing, he's kind of a motor mouth, and this is just a holdover from the commercial. He often like does shtick to the camera and will act like he's addressing an off-screen person named Vern. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Vern, I feel like I'm trying to explain Ray J. Johnson's "You Can Call Me Ray and You Can Call Me Jay."
This is what we had for humor.
This is what
for
passed.
Like a long time.
Like when we saw a new Ernest movie at the movie rental place at the front of the Kmart. Oh my God. It was like Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I, I did. So Ernest goes to camp. Ernest Saves Christmas, goes to jail, Scared Stupid, and Rides Again are all Ernest movies I've seen.
Yes.
At that time, I was like, yes, these first five Ernest movies, which I consider to be the original quintology, are just
Well, they incredible. Tell a complete story is the thing.
Yeah, like, it was such an arc for him. Ernest Goes to Camp was legitimately great as a kid. Like, that came out in 1987. I was fucking seven, and I loved it.
It was like, it was just Ernest, it was Meatballs, but with Ernest.
Yeah. You know, so like a PG version of Meatballs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to stress exactly how, like, sexless and pure Ernest humor is.
Yeah.
One of his big characters is an old woman with a neck brace, and that's it. like, there's the joke.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's
Ernest has characters as well. they canceled plans for Ernest and the Voodoo Curse. Ernest Spaced Out and Ernest the Pirate, which never came out because Jim Varney died, unfortunately.
Yeah, he died of lung cancer. He was a smoker his whole life.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah. But he touched millions of lives with his corny humor. I mean, Ernest Scared Stupid, like, that legit scared me, but I couldn't stop watching it. And that was the one with, like, the where the it was around
scared
and, like,
the hell out of me.
Yeah, but they just keep watching it again. Like, all, like, those weird little, like, mud creatures came to life from the enchanted tree or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'm due for an Ernest rewatch.
Maybe it's good.
Like, what?
Hey, Gary, what if Ernest is good?
What a weird place to be in my life. I'm just, like, tempted. I was just like, yeah, that sounds good. I want to sit back and associate with some Ernest.
Yeah, pop an edible.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I just, like, and just eat some popcorn. Uh-huh. You know, just like, you know, this is where he goes to camp. You know, he's a cowboy in this one. You know, and just have that be the end of my thinking for that day.
Yeah. Ah, shit. Might be good.
Might be good.
Shit, man. Neutral. The worst thing. You're not hurting anybody. Not doing any, you know, not doing any good, but.
How come there isn't an Ernest video game? I'm upset about that.
I mean, it would be a shitty platformer, right?
Yeah, but we would do it.
Well, of course. Well, I mean, because, like, then we wouldn't have to talk about Ernest during the fucking The Suffering episode.
Because it's The Suffering, which begins and ends at torque.
Yeah.
Like, the torque stops here. Like, it is hard to think of things to talk about other than torque.
Yeah.
The silent murderer, question mark.
Maybe, depending.
I am doing, for my atrocity tour.
Okay.
The books. I'm more than halfway through a book on Unit 731 now. So that's where I decided to take it. That's some wild shit.
What is Unit 731?
It is the World War II Japanese dark science division that did a lot of vivisection and live experimentation and germ warfare.
Jesus Christ, dude.
It's you know, I'm not happy at this place in my life right now.
Right.
This is not Atrocity Gary isn't a happy version of Gary.
Right, right.
The most fascinating thing to me about it, though, is that they had, like, plague fleas, you know, so they'd have fleas and they wanted to use them as weapons.
Okay.
And the way that they would, they had these men who they made their job. It's like, hey, if you want easy work, grow fleas. And what they would do is they'd put them head to toe in clothing and just be like, you can't cut your hair. You can't take a shower. You just had to let these fleas, like, grow on you.
Oh, God.
And then we will harvest them. Like, once a day, and that will be your job.
Wow.
It was like this, like, just fascinating, like, scary, dark thing. It's not as, I don't think it's the thing that breaks me out of this, but I think the next thing I'm going to do is the survivalist memoir, or the guy who lived as a hermit.
Yeah.
Because that's not quite as, like, I'm sure that's going to have some darkness, like, but it's not going to be, this might be my rock bottom for darkness.
For right now, maybe at least.
For right now. Yeah, because it's pretty rough. Like, the way it's told is not, you know, sensational at all.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, man, it's some extremes of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, they were doing experiments on Allied soldiers from the Pacific Theater, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting too because it's double gross. It's like gross because they did it, and it's also gross because, like, we didn't try a bunch of them for war crimes because we wanted their science knowledge.
Oh, I mean, Operation Paperclip, right?
Yeah, that kind of shit. So, like, there's the part of the book ends with just, like, where they, like, it's kind of like, where are they now? But it's you know, they're not now because they're not alive. But what happened to them after the war?
Uh-huh.
And, like, so many of them are, like, co-founders of medical concerns and teachers. And it's like, man, you shouldn't be able to vivisect and then.
That should be one you don't get to walk away from. Yeah.
Yeah. What is going on with that? Like, that is, that's evil.
Yeah.
You know, but it, you know, cheerful media doesn't make me feel better.
No.
So if I'm, you know, I might as well learn if I'm not going to feel good either way.
True.
You know?
Yeah. No, I finished up. I did a reread of Satan Tango. And then I read all three of the books that inspired Mother 3, The Notebook, The Proof, and The Third Lie. Both of those are like really depressing Hungarian books. And then I got through the most recently translated Strugatsky Brothers book. I got partway through that, The Doomed City, which is really good. But then Jonathan Myberg, the lead singer of Shearwater, is also like a PhD ornithologist. He released a book called The Most Remarkable Creature about the Caracara bird of South America, which is like apparently like the smartest bird of prey that lives. And like it's like him, you know, it's a nature book, nature writing, about both all of the research that has been done on this, but also his own kind of like trips and, you know, like the ways that these birds have intersected with history, along with really beautiful descriptions of just like the edge of the world down there where these things live. Yeah. So it's a little bit uplifting, although nature writing is always a little bit depressing because, you know, every story is
very long.
Yeah. No, because humans are monsters.
Yeah, it's going away.
Yeah.
You know, because you're reading a future history book.
Yeah. You know? These things aren't going to be alive. So, yeah.
Yeah. We're losing them.
Yep.
Yeah.
No. Sad. So I guess what I'm saying is there's ways out of it. You can break from the dark.
Oh, I'm certain that I can. You know, it's hard because it's what's interesting.
True.
You know, so I'm trying to follow what's interesting. And like, I just don't know if it's good for me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Which there's no shock that like art and entertainment can be bad for you and appealing because why would it be different than anything else?
Right.
You know, I had like chicken sandwich yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's like the size of a human head.
Probably too much chicken sandwich. Yeah.
Yeah. Entirely too much chicken sandwich. I didn't finish it. I only ate half of it. I'm going to eat the other half of it here in a couple of minutes.
Well,
it's going to be rad, but it's not good for me.
Yeah.
I just wanted it.
Well, but kind of like with, like I said, with your worry before, if you're aware enough to ask whether or not it's right, you're probably in an okay position.
Yeah. I got that real soul bot thing where I'm able to process over 10,000 anxieties per second. you know, like it's a, you know.
Yeah.
You know, worrying is what I do.
Yep.
The, I didn't find this is a thing where this game is too popular. So there's too much game fact stuff.
Yes.
If that headline didn't jump out to me, I would have none, you know, even the Wikipedia for this is like 10,000 words.
Yes.
This is a really well-documented game.
I want to read one of these things. Cause they're talking about like, ooh, the studio where they did the music, was haunted or whatever. We are capturing Ela's droning metallic rod instrument, Ela being one of the composers or what have you. And the engineer started complaining about background noise. I couldn't hear anything, so we played back the recording. All of us immediately heard very faint whispering, barely audible in the droning of the rods. We had all heard radio interference before, but this was completely different. It sounded like it was coming from in the room. The whispering remains embedded and audible in the recording of the rods and can be heard in the ambient music for the asylum level behind the added whispers.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. The people who made this movie are very high on their own supply.
Oh, yeah.
In general, like both from selling that and then like the sidebar. Like I see the suffering as somewhat unique among console action adventure shooter games in that the seriousness of its subject matter and the moral themes it endeavors to explore.
Well, they're comparing it to The Shining. The Shining was a movie that stood out for everyone as something that was deeply horrific, yet not cheesy or ridiculous. Hey, dude, your game is wicked cheesy and ridiculous.
Yeah, you're coming at the king.
Yeah, so
you're not doing any favors in fighting these comparisons.
Yeah,
you know the adventures of Torque. I would like to see Torque for Smash though.
Yeah. Torque joins the fight.
Yeah, I would love to see Torque, you know, Torque is unleashed from the yard or whatever. Like, Torque's on parole. And he goes, he's on parole on the condition he participates in against the subspace emissary or whatever.
On the condition that he kills Rob the robot.
Yeah, like, if you drown Luigi in his own blood, we're going to release you from prison, Torque.
On September 8th, 2005, Midway and MTV Films announced a film adaptation based on both The Suffering and The Suffering Ties That Bind.
It was my 25th birthday present to myself, was me willing that into the universe. And
yeah, but it didn't work. Happened.
Yeah. Well, oh, well, what else is new? But yeah, this is popular, but pretty crappy.
Yeah.
I like saying Torque.
Torque is good. That's how I sold it to you. Pondo also suggested this, saying this game is actually rad as all hot fuck, but it seemed thematically appropriate and you'll never waff it. So you were right there.
Yeah. The true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening to this. We appreciate you, Pondo. We appreciate you, Cole, for putting this forward.
Yeah.
What can people do if they like this show?
If people like this show, they can support us by doing things like going to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. At $5 a month, you get 2 extra episodes of the show per month, which we think is a good value. There are over 115 of those now, I think. So you've got you can go get it. Plenty. It's there for you. Yeah.
We know that if you pop on and change your thing, it's sometimes hard to navigate to get to the content you want. It's something we would love to have be different, but we only have so much control over it.
Yes.
But we want to, you know, generosity is the point.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope that if that's something you want, it is worth your time to dig for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But otherwise, you can leave ratings or reviews on whatever podcast directory you happen to get this from. And do you want me to do the final one?
Yeah.
As our friend on Twitter, Real Sean Fournier, says, until next time, keep nuking, Dukes.